All right, so hopefully that's a good kickoff for everybody. We have three great speakers following here. And so I'm going to start here of the first introduction here. The first one here is Alyssa Galatz. She's a senior sensory manager at Tyson Foods. And so she told me who her favorite rock and roll group is. Oh, yes. She says, hands down, she's a Rolling Stones fan. So, Alyssa.
Good morning, everyone. Today, I am going to give you an overview of some recent research we have conducted to understand the impact of priming on open-end responses in kids' testing. Understanding kids' perceptions to new product ideas and prototypes is extremely important and provides valuable information for product development. But I'm sure, as you have all also experienced, kids' testing can come with challenges. When conducting quantitative acceptance testing with kids, we often see low discrimination among samples. Sometimes they just like everything. We also only have the ability to ask a minimal number of questions to further understand those liking ratings due to fatigue, especially with the younger kids. And often we see limited or not very detailed open-end feedback. So new approaches are necessary that enable deeper insight, allowing for understanding of implicit responses to products and the product cues that drive those responses. We have been exploring priming to understand emotional connections and subconscious cues associated with products. So one official definition of priming here as defined by Wikipedia is a technique whereby exposure to one stimulus influences a response to a subsequent stimulus without conscious guidance or intention. So here's an example. Think about what your response would be if you were asked how you feel about your typical cup of morning coffee. So my guess is that simple attributes or responses are popping into your head, such as, it smells great, or it has a bold flavor, maybe it wakes me up, or is part of my typical daily routine. Now imagine your response if you were asked to select an image that describes how you feel about your typical cup of morning coffee and describe why. Likely, more detailed stories and metaphors are entering your mind, such as, the bold flavor wakes me up, helping me to focus on my task for the day, or the aroma fills my house and brightens my morning. Or maybe a strong cup of coffee makes me feel like the sky is the limit and I can accomplish my goals for the day. So the use of priming, in this case through imagery, inspires storytelling and spurs memories and emotional connections that enable deeper insight. Priming activates the brain to focus on something whether the person is aware of it or not. It reveals subconscious cues that impact and drive decision making, and in turn can expand what is perceived about a product. There are many types of priming exercises that are used in consumer product research, which have shown to change the way a person perceives a product and the type of information that is received. So some examples of priming exercises are incorporating experiences with consumers before they participate in research, like sending them to a restaurant or a store. Having consumers tell stories about a specific experience or situation or memory is also an example of a priming exercise. Presenting consumers with a range of sensory stimuli, maybe various fabrics that vary in texture or pattern, different aromas, different sounds, that evoke emotional metaphors and reveal subconscious connections. And imagery is a priming exercise through collages or responding to images, as I have shown in the previous example. So we have found emotional priming to be useful with adults, specifically imagery, as the emotional prime has resulted in more product differentiation in quantitative testing, has provided more detailed open-end comments, and has revealed emotional connections. So this really has provided a more holistic view of the product experience and has helped to better understand product concept fit. However, the use of imagery with kids has not been as effective, especially with younger kids, due to their limited nostalgia and experiences to pull from. Emojis, on the other hand, are a type of imagery that continue to become more widely used to enhance communication with kids. This is observed in education, in the medical and mental health fields. So based on that, we decided to explore the impact of emojis on open-end responses in kids' testing. Our hypothesis was that use of emojis as an emotional prime would inspire storytelling with kids, leading to more detailed open-end comments that were connected to emotion. So we conducted a central location test. We had 100 kids. They ranged in age from 8 to 12 years. It was a sequential mimetic study of two frozen breakfast products. With 50 of the participants, we had them complete a standard approach where we had them complete the typical hedonic ratings, followed by a forced preference question and an open end to further understand why they selected that product as their favorite. With the other 50 respondents, we used an emotional prime approach where we had them complete the same hedonic ratings followed by the forced preference, but this time complete an emoji exercise followed by open end comments. So this illustrates how the standard approach was in the questionnaire. So the first question was the preference question where we asked them what their favorite sample was overall, followed by an open-end question where they responded to why they selected that product as their favorite. And this illustrates how the emotional prime approach was in the questionnaire. So after the forced preference question, we asked the kids to select one emoji that best described how they felt about the product, followed by two open-end questions. What does this emoji mean to you? And why did you select that emoji to describe your favorite product? The set of emojis that we selected are widely used in schools. We tried to pick emojis that were just faces and stay away from action emojis like thumbs up or thumbs down that were too literal. We made sure to randomize the emojis for each respondent, and the hidden definitions and numbers here were for our use. Kids didn't actually see those. So what we found is that the feedback from the two approaches was really vastly different. With the emotional prime, the comments were focused more on the kid than the product. Some verbatims from the study really helped to bring this to life. So with emojis as the emotional prime, we received comments of things like, it was a sign of happiness to me and it makes me feel great. I'm happy that I get to eat food with my hands. I'm surprised I love this so much, or I feel cool after eating it. Where with the standard approach, the comments were much more product focused. It had the right feel in my mouth. The flavors were good. Perfect amount of filling. I tasted more cheese. It was a bit sweet, and that was great. We also learned from the emotional prime approach that we did receive more emotional feedback, but it was much less detailed, and it was not tied to product attributes. So with the emojis as the emotional prime, 28% of kids talked about specific feelings and emotions associated with the product, where with the standard approach, not surprisingly, we didn't receive any comments around feelings and emotions. Conversely, with the standard approach, 74% of kids talked about taste and flavor of the product, where only 17% did with the emotional prime approach. So very different information coming from these two different exercises. We also found that with the emotional prime, we received simple one-thought responses from many of the kids, where with the standard approach, we received multiple thought responses. Some examples of those simple thoughts are, it was cool to me, best thing ever, or OMG. So this really suggests that emojis are considered a shorthand in kids' minds and can really convey just a lot of information to them in just one character. It's also important to mention that kids tended to select from a top set of emojis, indicating that a smaller subset would be more useful in future research. So overall, there was value in the information that we received from both approaches. With the standard approach, we got much more product-focused feedback on product attributes. With the emotional prime approach, we received more information on feelings and emotions associated with the product. We were hoping that by adding the emotional prime exercise to the standard questioning, that we would get a more holistic view of the product that incorporated emotion that was also tied to product feedback, like we saw with the imagery with adults. We did not see that. We got more of just the emotion when we used the emojis in this example. There are some opportunities for improvement to potentially make that connection in the future. Using a shorter list of emojis is suggested, as kids tended to gravitate towards a top list, and this may also help to provide more product differentiation in the future. Rephrasing the question to focus more on the product is also recommended. So we had two open-end questions that we asked the kids. The first one was about what does the emoji mean to them? And that was a really valuable first question for us. But the second question was much too general. Most kids just tended to repeat their answer from the first question to the second question. We approached the questioning in a way that has been successful with adults, but it's clear that we need to focus kids much more on the product experience. And finally, incorporating an example or a practice question to model the type of feedback and the response that is desired from this type of question would also be helpful for kids. Thank you so much for your time today.